So it is good to be here with you. As I said before, I'm the executive pastor of Micah's Porch Community Church. My husband is the lead and founding pastor of that church. Kleber and I have known each other since he was called here and joined Prairie Group, which is our minister's study group. And it has been fun to be with him every year, these last many years in November. The one thing that that I wanted to kind of let you know before I started as kind of a disclaimer beyond the previous disclaimer is that the thing that you should know about me and about my husband, more about my husband than myself, is that we're a little crazy. And by crazy, I mean we've taken up a crazy thing that we're doing with our lives. And it's sort of an act of faith and service, but we are crazy Unitarian Universalist evangelists, the both of us. So the good news is that if you don't feel evangelical, we're leaving. And the good news is also that I'm actually here with a purpose to kind of convert you to a little bit of that evangelical viewpoint. So I served for 7 years in Chicago in another church before joining my husband this fall. He is a church planter, and you probably have no idea unless you've been an evangelical what in the world that means. And church planters are crazy pastors who decide to go out and raise up churches where there aren't any. Now, the city of Chicago is a great place to do that, you might be surprised to know, because it's the most underserved city for our faith in the country. Per population, we have the fewest Unitarian Universalists in the city of Chicago than any other major city in the country. There are less than 700 Unitarian Universalists. We've managed to shrink that number. There were less than 750 a number of years ago. Now there are less than 700 Unitarian Universalists in the city. And if you were to compare that to, let's say, St. Louis, where there are, I would imagine, probably 1,000 Unitarian Universalists in the churches here, or in Portland, Oregon, where I did my internship, there were more than 3,000 Unitarian Universalists just in the city and 5,000 and if you counted the larger outlying areas. It's a wildly underserved community. Does that mean that people in Chicago don't want to hear the message of, you know, God is one, God is love, or God loves everyone no matter what, no exceptions, no one's left behind? Is it because that no one wants to hear that? No, it's not. It's because there's no mother church in Chicago to help found other churches. And so in order for a church to be born without the benefit of a mother church, you have to plant a church. You have to raise up a church by yourself. And, you know, people do ask me this question all the time. The Unitarian Universalist Association's job is not to plant churches. They're to serve the churches that already exist. So if you want to plant a church, you raise up that church yourself. You go, how do you do it? You go to everybody you know, and you ask them for money and hope that they give some to you. And this is very easy in like a Baptist context, right? Because you go to another church and you say, I'm Bob, the church builder guy, and I want to plant a church in a small town or a major city, USA, and I would like you to give me some money. And they ask you some questions, and then they say, yes, we would like to do that. And they hand you usually a pile of money that will get you through your first year or two, and off you go. It's a $100,000 project to plant a church in a rural or suburban area, and it's a $300,000 project to plant a church in an urban area. I don't know where you get these numbers, but I can tell you it's probably true. I mean, that's just sort of the church consultants will tell you. We managed to start a church in an urban area for $30,000. We went to our friends and our family and raised $20,000 from David's family. I went to my colleagues and we raised another $10,000. And with a lot of prayer and a lot of grace and a lot of amazing and unexpected and unimaginable things, we've raised up a church in the heart of the city where there was none. So we went from 17 people. So it was like being kind of in worship here today, actually. If you came to the first service and the second, we had 17 people in August of this year, and on Easter Sunday there were 85. So people in worship. And so that's kind of the growth trajectory that we're looking to continue to do. Our goal is to have 100 people in worship this fall and 200 people in worship next year. How do we manage, or do we plan on doing that? Well, I will tell you a little bit about that. But I want to back up a little bit and tell you a little bit of my story. So I'm married to a man named David Owen O'Quill, and he's an evangelical. And I knew that when I met him because we talked about it in seminary where we met. We were very good friends for a very long time, and he just told me that he had this heart. We both had this heart to reach people for our faith, and I did that in Chicago for a number of years. He did that in South Texas for a number of years. And when we got married, we decided that it wouldn't be really fair to the people of South Texas and Corpus Christi to try to plant another church in their small town, since he was there was only one, and he was their pastor. So he moved to Chicago, and we started another church in Chicago. That's what we decided to do. And now you got to be a little nuts to take up this particular task, particularly because most people don't understand what you're talking about if you're a Unitarian Universalist. So how did he do it? Well, you got one of these probably when you came in. It may look a little bit different, but he sent out these postcards to the neighborhood. So he invited every single person in his neighborhood to come to church, and that's how he raised up his church. You have to be consistent with that kind of presence. You have to kind of keep sending those once a month, because as you might know, your life changes. And you might have thought about coming to church for a while before you actually did, but something prompted you, something changed in your life, something went on, and you were like, well, no, I actually need a church now. Like now, right now. And it's because maybe you moved, or it's because maybe you experienced a loss, or it's because maybe someone around you experienced a loss, or maybe it's because you had a new relationship and you wanted something more, or maybe you just that longing that had been in you for a long time became more thunderous, that like, gosh, this is all there is? Is this it? There's got to be more than just like I'm doing everything in my life. I go to work, I come home, I work out, I eat. What else? There's got to be something more. And so that hunger finally got the best of you. Or maybe it was an addiction or a loss, a divorce. Who knows? What drew you into church? Sometimes the unknown, new family, new birth, new relationship. All those things draw us to church. But something goes on in us that prompts us to say, you know what, actually, this is the week that I'm going to rearrange my life and show up in worship somewhere. Now, where is that going to be? And our goal is to have people keep getting these so that they think about us when they're making that decision. So our commitment is to have everybody in our neighborhood feel invited to our church. Why did you come to church for the first time? Is there someone in your life whose life is broken, whose heart is breaking, whose life is coming unraveled that needs church? And would you be willing to reach out to them? Help them find a place. I don't necessarily care where people go to worship, but I know that the church, when it's doing its job, changes people's lives, can right the world, can heal where there's tremendous brokenness. And I don't want people to be without that healing and restoration. I don't want people to be without the invitation to that experience. It matters how we are and who we're reaching. So is there someone in your life who needs to be loved and restored? And is your church prepared to help? That's the question. That's the question. Are we prepared to help? Micah's Porch Community Church, the mission statement, purpose of the church is to connect the disconnected to God, to one another, and to the needs of the world. Comes from a name, Mike, where did the name Micah's Porch come from? People ask that sometimes, and it comes from the line of scripture in the prophet Micah, minor biblical prophet. And there was all kinds of stuff going on when Micah was prophesying, and people were worshiping the wrong things and in kind of an idolatrous way. Maybe in our today's version, it would be like a consumerist-driven kind of thing. And they were kind of being faithful in a wrong-headed way. And so he had that piece of scripture. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? To be a people who do justice in our neighborhood, to be a people who love mercy and pour it out on the people around us, to pour it out on the people who come through our doors, to pour it out on our neighbor, pour it out on the strangers around us, and to walk humbly with our God. And the porch part is, David wants the church to be a front porch experience, to be an accessible experience, to meet people where they are at, to not have people feel alienated when they come to church. So it looks nothing like this. They meet in a theater in the middle of Chicago, right across from a Blue Line stop. You walk in, and there's donuts and coffee before church, and you can take them into worship with you. And there's a band that plays really loud music. And they're learning to sing, because you have to teach unchurch people everything. So they're learning to sing. Please, God, help them sing more quickly. I miss that part of church. I miss singing out. I love to sing in church. I love to worship in church, and it's so important to me. They're learning to sing. I'm very excited. But it's hard to sing with like 10 people. It's much better to sing with 50 or 100 people. So that's what we're aiming for. There's none of these orders of service. You know, we just worship together, and there's some music, and there's some prayer, and there's a message, and there's some more music, and people get to go home. They get to actually go back out to the donuts and coffee and visit with each other before they go home. There's a kids program. I run the kids program in our church. I was the second family. We had two kids that mom and was bringing her two kids when I arrived on the scene in November. My kid was the third kid. We have 20 kids that are part of the church and 5 kids that are visiting the church. So from November to now, that's pretty good growth in our church school. It's a great place to be and to gather and worship. So meeting people where they're at, Micah's Porch, that's what we are trying to do. How do you prepare your church to be a place that invites the neighborhood? How do you create a space for worship that's utterly relevant and contextually meeting the neighborhood where it's at? And how do you change that over time to continue to be relevant to your neighborhood, to where your church is? Now, you here are in Alton. You are not in the heart of the city of Chicago, in a neighborhood that's filled with young urban people who are mostly have only very small children. There are most people with older kids move out of the city for whatever reason. I can't imagine, but they move out of the city. And so there's a lot of young kids, there's a lot of young couples, there's a lot of young singles, and that's the neighborhood, that's the context in which we do ministry. If we were to start a church in another neighborhood in our city, it would be different. If we were to go to Portage Park, which if you know Chicago, it's a little bit north, a little bit west, we'd have a salsa band, right? Because that's what would match that neighborhood. We'd have a salsa band, and we'd have lots of family ministry. If we were to be in Uptown, we'd have a gospel choir, and we would have a recklessly multicultural community, because that's who lives in that neighborhood. So what does your neighborhood look like? Who is in this community? All of it. All of Alton and the outlying area, who's in the community? And do you relentlessly and recklessly invite them to be engaged in the ministry of your church or not? And why? Why? The purpose of the church is to be on a collective mission. Now, I don't mean like a fancy mission statement. I mean to be on a collective mission, to have a sense of shared purpose. And the good news is that for most all of every church, no matter what denomination you might go to, it's usually very simple, like love one another, usually something of the mission. So however you guys describe that for yourselves, how are you going to love and reach your neighbor and the stranger? How are you going to kind of with reckless abandon love up Alton and the areas around Alton? What is it that you are particularly equipped to do? David and I and our church is particularly equipped to meet people where they're at in the city, and we're particularly committed to raising up churches in our city, to raising up leaders in our city to lead those churches, and to send them with resources to plant other churches so that they don't have to go through what David and I went through. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. It's the hardest thing we've ever done as a family, to raise up a church and to go to your family and ask them for money and to go to your colleagues and ask them for money is not an easy thing to do. But when they say yes and then it works, it's really grace. So that's been really great. And it's not been easy to just raise something up out of nothing. You know, it's like I told my husband in the fall when I quit my job, I said, you know, I don't think you can actually plant a church unless you're working without a net. You can't have a security blanket. You can't have a, oh, well, there's another income and we're going to be okay. I don't think it works like that. I think you've got to be all in. So that's what we've done. As a church, we made a decision, my husband and I, that we would keep going and we would focus on raising up not this church, but to figure out how to equip and plant other churches. After Easter Sunday this year, if we raised $100,000 to support our operating costs. David never drew a salary for 2 years. And so we decided we were going to be all in, but we needed to have something to be able to continue to live in Chicago and pay the rent. And you know what? Now, we're the oldest people, and there's 7 people that are over 40. My husband and I are going to be 2 of them soon. There's 7 people over 40 in our church. I'm the old-timer there. My mother is one of those 7 people, me, my mom, and my husband, and then 4 other people are our older set. But those 20 and 30-year-old people, some of them in college, you know, some of them in their first job, some of them looking for work, giving 20, 30, we asked people to give $50 a week. That's what we asked for. And the average gift per week in our church is $43. $2,200 a year is the average pledge at Micah's Porch Community Church. Sacrifice. These people want their church. You know why? Because if we roll up the rug, there's nowhere else to go. There's no other church in the city that's doing what we're doing. There's no other church in the city that preaches a gospel of inclusion that said God loves everybody. It doesn't matter what you believe or who you are or what you've done or where you've been. There's no other place that teaches that. There's no other place that does that and plays Coldplay on Sunday morning. Part of the room laughs, yes. You know, so we're it for that community. And so they're very committed people. They are raising up a church, and now there's not just David, and that's not just David and me. There's 65 people who have decided to be all in, and then 40 more people who are visiting and checking us out. That's pretty cool. It's a pretty great feeling. And I'm just totally faithful that we're going to be able to be a community of 500 people and then to send 100 people away, find them a pastor, the right leader who's fired up to move to another neighborhood and start a church in another neighborhood. One of the things that happened once we made this decision that we were going to say, this is what we need to our people, is that all these weird other things started happening. David started getting phone calls and emails from all around the country. He got a phone call from a colleague in a church educator in North Carolina. He said, you know, I've been following Micah's Porch for a couple years now, and I'm really excited about what you're doing. I think I want to plant one of these churches. Can I come? And can I start one of these with you? And David said, well, we've got to see this one goes first, but you bet. Keep doing what you're doing. And we will equip you. We will help you. And we just have faith that somewhere along the line, someone's going to come along and believe that other churches should exist like this, and that someone's going to believe that enough to give me $50,000 so that I can give it to somebody else and say, Pastor, if you can raise $50,000, I got $50,000 for you. Go plant yourself a church and raise up a community of faith that says it's for everybody, not for some. I want that in the nation. And I don't want to change we're going to do this thing in June called Old School Sunday. So we're going to play like old school hymns, and it's going to be a good time. But I don't want to change old school churches. I think it's important. Most, you know, about half the people now that are young were raised up in church, but half of them were not, knew nothing about church or worship or anything like that. And we have to be able to be relevant. If we're going to move forward, we've got to be able to meet half of the coming generation with a ministry that matches where they're at. It matters. Those people matter to me. We have lots and lots of beautiful buildings like this that serve amazing people. I was one of them. I love church in a traditional context. I'm so glad to be here and play these good old hymns out of the hymnal and sing songs that it may even be written in a minor key. I love church. I'm a church nerd. That's how I ended up with this job. But my husband was not raised in church, and he felt alienated when he came to his Unitarian Universalist church after going everywhere in town. He went to Pentecostal church, he went to Baptist church, he went to the Methodist church, he went to Episcopalian church, and he finally came to the Unitarian Universalist church in East Shore, Washington state, and fell in love with the message, but never connected with the community, you know? It's so important that there just be a place to meet people where they're at, to say there's a spot for you. So we need to be able to do that in a lot of different contexts. We need to be able to do that in traditional ways and contemporary ways. And contemporary, my friends, is not new. Contemporary worship has been going on for 30 years, and it's what many people were raised with now. So it's not like a new innovative thing. It's just a thing that's we've got to do to stay with the nation. And that matters to me. So let me close with a couple of these other ideas. Something happens in church when church goes well and when church goes right. And when church goes well and when church goes right, it becomes a community. I don't care what it looks like. You can be a traditional church, contemporary church, whatever kind of church you want to be. But when church is going right, this is what it looks like. It's a community of people who are facing not one another, but are facing out into the world back to back with their hands reached out to greet the guest, to welcome the stranger, to walk out even into the world and bring that message of hope and love out into the world. People who grow in the life of the Spirit are generous people, are loving people, are people who, when something goes wrong, looks to heal the relationship, looks to say, you know what, that hurt me, and I'm really, let's talk about it, and let's work through it, and we're going to find our way. They don't gossip, or backbite, or judge. When something goes wrong, or a person falls short, they don't just let it go. They say something and offer encouragement. And when something goes right, they don't forget to bless people. So a church that is thriving and a church that is being the church is a church that's filled with people who are broken and healed, who follow the spiritually wise people in their community, who follow the people who have spiritual wisdom. Because all kind of people come to church. I'm here to tell you, every man or a person comes to church. And broken down, beat up, hurting, sad people need to be able to find shelter in the body of the church and need to be tended to. And there must be wise, spiritually deep, thoughtful people in the church whom the other people look up to, who shape the ministry of the church, so that the ministry of the church never becomes focused on itself, but the ministry of the church is always something that's for others, that says, it's not about me, it's about we. And it might even be about you. That is the kind of church I need. That's the kind of church I want to serve. That's the kind of church that I'm willing to sacrifice for, to lay down my life for, to connect people who are disconnected to one another, to God, to the needs of the world. So what is your church particularly equipped to do? How is it that you can demonstrate that you have a love for this city that's unbreakable and unshakable, and that you might actually discover something about that kind of love and grace if you came here to worship? What is it that you can do for your city, for one another? And how can you equip yourselves to be a community that's organized around service and sacrifice, that's committed to forgiveness and reconciliation, that lives with a sense of expectation about what's possible, that knows that each and every person, each and every one of you has a particular purpose, something that's just yours, and that your signature is supposed to go out into the world that brings love the way you offer it, the way only you can to the people that you've been given to love, and that when you do that, everything about your life will change. Because those are the things that really matter. Those are the things that make life worth living. And that's why we come to church, to remember that, to organize our lives around that, that there's a greater love that's for us and with us and won't ever let us go. And that when we tap into that, that's called grace. And when grace pours into our lives, grace can pour out of us, and we can love each other in radical ways. I hope you do that here in Alton. I'm looking forward to keeping doing that in my city. And I want to thank you for having me today. If you want to sort of feel like you have a piece of the action in Chicago, I'm looking for some grace and possibility. So if you want to support us, I'd love a pledge from you or a gift from your family. This is how you can reach us. If you're looking for one of these, you can. There's another much more enticing postcard on the table in the other room, which also has our website on it. You can look at that. There's also a little bit about our stewardship campaign that's in there. So.